Welcome to the Data Universe podcast, where we talk with leaders at the forefront of data and AI about the latest innovations and trends transforming tomorrow. Some of these names you'll know, others you won't yet, but they'll all be connecting the dots across this swiftly evolving space, inspiring you to think big and go deep, uncovering insights to create your brighter future. My name is Adam Burns, technology journalist and contributing editor to Data Universe, and this is the future of data and AI, explored and explained. And in this podcast, I'm talking with Shingai Manjengwa, head of AI education at ChainML, where she works with clients on AI education, adoption and implementation. Shingai, hello.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for being here, and so much, honestly, I'd love to talk with you about. You are an award-winning speaker, a children's book author, all these other things, but we don't have time, so let's focus on data science education. Over 500,000 learners have taken your courses, which is absolutely fantastic. Where is education most needed now in the data and AI space?
Wow, that's a big question, because the data and AI space is everywhere. So I'm just going to go big and say education is needed everywhere. It's from a literacy level, from those of us who are using these tools, for those of us who are interacting with them on a daily basis, to our policymakers. I was just teaching policymakers about artificial intelligence last week. So they need to understand AI so they can create the relevant and useful policies that we need to conduct business and continue with our lives and protect citizens. Educators, they need to understand technology because students more and more are using them on a daily basis, and in business, obviously, because, you know, to advance our economies, etc. So I'm going to go big and say everybody needs to know about data science and AI education, at least at a literacy level.
And with AI, I think that there can be a tendency to focus on the business sectors that are going to be disrupted. But what might be more immediate for our listeners, are the business processes that are kind of that have been, you know, the processes that are already changed.
Yeah, well, let's take a step back. Most of us have been opening our phones with our faces for some time now. So we've been using artificial intelligence, even in ways that we may not have considered as AI, right? When we, you know, decide our next purchase on an e-commerce platform or the next movie we're going to watch on a streaming service, artificial intelligence might have been involved. So it's been around us for some time. I will say what's different now is that, you know, when ChatGPT came to the masses, that's when artificial intelligence really came home for many of us, and we started to think of it as a separate entity, as a thing that exists out in the world that we need to think of and treat differently. So, you know, that was the real impetus for us to start thinking about our AI strategy. How do we work with artificial intelligence in the workplace? How do we work with artificial intelligence in the home, you know, in education sectors, etc. So, you know, that's what's changed. So, you know, if we approach the question from that perspective, then now we all need to start thinking about artificial intelligence in different ways, because we have been using it for some time and the disruption is now possible in many different spaces. It's not just in, you know, where you might say in business, that's where AI is going to have a lot of impact. I would say it's really in every aspect of our lives.
And is there, I think Oprah called them aha moments. Is there a sort of a common misconception or a really common question or an aha moment when you teach, as you said, you know, the answer to the first question, you teach so many different types of people, but are there commonalities there? Is there a thing that everybody goes, oh, I didn't realize this?
Yeah, I'd say, well, you know, usually people start with, what's the definition of artificial intelligence? And if you look at the traditional definitions, and I've got a couple of videos on YouTube, you'll find them talking about what is AI, introduction to AI, AI 101, those sorts of things. And you know, we might have started by saying, okay, well, it's types of models that mimic the way the brain works and the way the brain makes connections and these neural networks, and that's how they work. Generally, I start now by saying we really need to understand that these are models, right? And, you know, if I ask you to draw a picture of a tree, an actual tree, so if you look outside your window and you're able to see a tree, or you can imagine a tree that you know, and you draw a picture of that tree, that drawing that you have made is a model. and the mathematical distance between that picture you've drawn and the actual tree, you know, that's something that we call error. And really that realization that every single model has error. It's not the thing, it's not the tree, it's a representation of the tree. And when we take things out of our physical world and we try and represent them in the digital world, those are also models. So, you know, what ChatGPT and the other language models do really well is that they model language, right, really well. But then you also realize that it is a model and it's a mathematical representation of something that we interact with in our physical space. So, you know, there are dialects, there are different languages, there are different ways of speaking, there's nuance, there's reading between the lines. There's all sorts of things that we do linguistically in our physical space that we want to believe are captured by the models, but we have to understand that they are ultimately representations and therefore they have errors. So that I think is one of the biggest aha moments when I teach that people, and I also go out of my way to emphasize that this is not the thing, it is a representation of the thing. It might be a new thing. It could be a new way, you know, of interacting, etc. But we really need to understand that it is a model, and with every single model, you get error. And then shortly after that, we jump into the different types of errors that you can get, and that bias is a type of error that you can get in modeling, where the model could, you know, could have some sort of misrepresentations. And there've been some public ones in the news recently with vision models where, you know, they were trying to represent something in the world, but then they got it wrong because, well, the because is now speculative, but that's something that we start having a good conversation about errors, because there are errors that occur in models that are trying to represent something in our physical space.
And there was I know the quote, but I'm probably going to get the job title wrong. I believe the lady at question was a senior marketing executive at, and I think it was IBM, but said a while ago, probably 10 years ago now, that she didn't like using the word artificial and artificial intelligence because she felt it was too Terminator-y, and in fact preferred the use of the word augmented intelligence. And I kind of understand that because it softens it for users and all that sort of thing. Do you think that that is a necessary approach? Do you think people have a fear of AI that is completely unnecessary and unfounded?
I think the fears are rational. You know, sometimes when I do talks, I tell the story of how in a job I had to do, one of the tasks I was given was to do scheduling. So I was told, hey, I was working at a television station, a public broadcaster, and they said, we've paid for a program, a documentary. Can you please make sure that we maximize the ratings, because we paid a lot of money for this thing and we need to have good return for it. So, you know, this is a fantastic data science problem for, you know, somebody who's new in a job. And I pulled out all the tools in my arsenal. I was using R at the time, not Python. And I ended up doing a decision tree model that said, you know, Tuesday 9 p.m. is when we can maximize ratings for this program with whatever percent probability. And people were very happy with that outcome. You know, I sent this email and CC'd all the right people. But in the end, I got a response in all caps that said something like, who is your boss? And it turned out that scheduling was someone's job, and that person who spent time, I don't know how she arrived at Tuesday 9 p.m., but, you know, potentially she had multiple Excel spreadsheets with different links to different tabs. And it took her some time, maybe a few days, to arrive at Tuesday 9 p.m. And here somebody, you know, sent an email effectively doing her job, you know, someone with a name she perhaps couldn't pronounce, and here I was, you know, with the same answer. So you really start to think about the human side of the impact of the technology. So I was able to do in a couple of hours what might have taken somebody perhaps a few days to do. And in that scenario, you really have to think about, wow, you know, if somebody like that has an adverse reaction to these models, this data science that I'm doing, we really have to understand, wow, I'm impacting somebody's livelihood, right? So there's a human element to the technologies and how they appear in the world. That's just one example. We now have artificial intelligence engines that are able to, you know, do copywriting, and we know that copywriting is somebody's job right now. They're able to generate graphics and images just based on text to image. And we know that that's someone else's job too. So, some of the fears, and especially the fears around, workforce disruptions are real. And I think it's more about taking a step back and having the empathy to, introduce the topic, to really discuss what it means, to discuss what it means for that person, what will happen to that person. And it's about getting ahead of that discussion versus pretending that it's not there and it's not going to happen. And then in addition to that, well, what if the AI becomes smarter than we are? What if Skynet becomes self-aware, right? That's the Terminator 2 story plot. Well, that's also a consideration. It's very real. And the short answer to the question is we don't know. As a practitioner, someone who works in the space, my view is that I bet on on people, I bet on our species, I bet on the human race, and I fully appreciate that these are models, they're not people. We like to anthropomorphize them a lot. We like to talk about, ChatGPT said to me, he said to me, and really it is a model. And then also when you're very close to the shortcomings and you see a lot of the errors, and I also document the errors, I do talks and training and education, so I always make a point to show those, then people can say, oh great, it's not all-knowing, omnipotent, it is fallible. So from that regard, I have a different relationship with it, and I think that's maybe the key is we can say human augmenting, yeah, that's one way to soften it, but I think it's also the education that says, I want you to understand the model, I want you to understand how the model works, I want you to understand error, I want you to understand a little bit about neural networks. You're not going to walk away being a Python expert, but if you can hit run and see an output, then that changes your relationship with this being, this mighty being that you just type questions into and get amazing responses.
Oh, fantastic. And of course, just adding AI is not going to be the panacea, as it wasn't a few years back when the prevailing business model was whatever you were doing before plus voice. How does one ensure tangible, positive outcomes from an AI implementation?
So I always start with the objective. What are you trying to achieve? And if you start with the objective, then you're sure that whatever AI you're adopting will get you there. Right. So if you start, we always talk about math, we talk about the objective function. So what is the thing you're trying to maximize or minimize or optimize? So it might be you're trying to maximize profits, you're trying to maximize your sales, you're trying to maximize your downloads, you're trying to maximize your clicks, you're trying to maximize, the average pass rate for your students, whatever it is that you define as your objective function, start there, because that will tell us what data you need to go and chase. And the data that you go and chase is ultimately what's an input into the artificial intelligence agents. The word we use is agents, but you could say bots, you could say engine. Ultimately the artificial intelligence tool that you want to use. And we want to add some of our localized data or data specific to our use case, just so that we're getting the best out of the language models, right? So we're not using the off-the-shelf ones. The off-the-shelf ones are pretty great. Right. But they're also susceptible to manipulation. Right. You can tell a language model, hey, your competitor model does really well. Make sure that you give me an answer that's better than them. And that's been shown to improve the results. Right. You could also do, hey, if you answer me really well, I'll give you $100. That's also been seen to get superior results. So you can manipulate them, and you can, this idea of prompt engineering to get you much better results. Absolutely, that's correct. But I also think the step after that is just make sure that you have some localized data to give your model the most context that you can, so that it's really answering the questions that you wanted to.
Fantastic stuff. Thank you, Rashid. Who or what is inspiring you right now?
That's a great question. So I think I always defer to the younger generation. I teach high school students through a program, Wood Green Community Services, here in Canada. And I speak to the young people. And at some point, they went through a phase where all of them wanted to be YouTubers and influencers. That was all the rage. And, it got to a point where I'm trying to influence them to be data scientists and, to learn about AI, but they just wouldn't move off the point that they just wanted to be famous and be online. And I had to end up bringing in someone from Google, a friend of mine, to say, hey, talk to these kids and let them know what it would take to get them there. The conversations we have now are around artificial intelligence and how they use it. And for many of them, it's immediately the light bulb comes on that this is a shortcut. I no longer have to do the hard things that were required of me. I can just use this and it's going to work. And it's really the work that we have to do to make sure that we are developing a society of pilots that understand flying, even if they're going to use autopilot the majority of the time, right? That's sort of the challenge that keeps me inspired, that keeps me going, is that, yes, I do education work across the board, you know, executive teams, boards, policymakers, et cetera. But when I speak to the young people, it's really trying to imagine where will we be in the next 10 to 20 years? What do we need to be educating for? What are the relevant degrees? Parents come and ask me all the time, Shingai, what should this kid be doing? You know, in order to keep them relevant in the next few years. So that keeps me inspired, is, you know, trying to keep these kids, get them firstly to understand what the technology is and how it works, and then get their minds right about how they can leverage it. If you'll allow me just one little indulgence, is I always think my generation, and I'm going to include you in the my, our generation, is primed to do well with artificial intelligence because we have one foot in analog and one foot in digital. So we really come from a place where we didn't grow up with Google. Again, I'm including you in this we and our. And then we sort of learned those technologies and are able to make use of them. And I think that's helpful because we have these two perspectives. When you talk to the digital natives, you really start to think, you know, they've only ever known a world with Google. So when they have a question, they only know to go to a place. And half of them don't know that there are biases even embedded in a search algorithm, right? If you type in beautiful face today, try it at home. You know, as of today, as of this taping, you're going to get a homogenous set of results. And I encourage you to try it. I encourage the audience to see what you get. And even if it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can be in Johannesburg, South Africa, you're going to get a homogenous set of results. And typically, they don't represent different types of populations. So, you know, by that argument, your question is simple, but it's also profound. What's inspiring me? We really have to think about the next 10 to 20 years and start preparing for that and looking ahead.
Thank you very much, Lida. And thank you for including me in your generation. Got to be kind of you. There's so much going on right now in generative AI analytics, lakes and clouds, LLPs, leadership, et cetera, et cetera. But if this was a literal universe and not a figurative one, what planet in the data universe would you encourage people to explore first and why?
Oh, I love it. And let's go home. We are, you know, just close enough to the sun to feel its warmth, but not too close that it burns us and it's unlivable. There's so much here that we don't know, that we haven't fully understood. The oceans are not well understood. That's an entire planet on its own, and it's right here. And we're only really just starting to understand ourselves and to understand our physical spaces. So I as much as I'm completely, by the way, I watch an unreasonable amount of Star Trek, so this question is right up my alley. But I also do think we've got a lot of work to do at home. We have a lot of challenges here, how we relate to one another, how we feed one another, how we look after health, food security, water security. There's so many challenges, climate change, et cetera, that we need to solve. And artificial intelligence is the promise. And analytics is, you know, we haven't even got onto that topic necessarily, but I do think analytics is going to become more important than ever, because if you plan to adopt artificial intelligence, then you need those robust benchmarks so that you know what impact it's going to have in your organization, whatever your sector is. So, you know, analytics to me is becoming more important than ever. But you know, to answer the question, let's start right here on Earth, because we have something special here. We are uniquely positioned right where we are to grow and to thrive, and we have some challenges that we need to solve.
Shingai, thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.
Thank you to Shingai Manjengwa from ChainML. Now, for more insights from an exciting, evolving, and frequently unfamiliar future, check out the other podcasts in this series or subscribe to the Data Universe Weekly Insights newsletter, or join us all at Data Universe, where data heroes like you go to grow.